Estamos a esta hora y tenemos el placer, el gusto y el honor de saludar al saxofonista de esta agrupación, Scott Page. Thank you for being with us in W Radio, Scott.
Oh, thank you very much. Very happy to be here. Thank you for having me on the show.
Bueno, pues la primera pregunta yo creo que tiene que ser, ¿cómo está él? Hace mucho tiempo, pues, no sabemos, o sabemos por aparte de cómo está el señor Roger Waters, de cómo están algunos de los integrantes. ¿Cómo está él y cuál ha sido su relación con la música en los últimos años?
Scott, we would like to start this interview asking how are you, because we of course know a little bit about Roger Waters, David Gilmour, but how are you right now, and what is your relationship with music nowadays?
Oh yeah, well yeah, you know, my background right now is I've been really focused on two things in the music, kind of music, but also the business side of music around Web3 and what's going on with tokens, NFTs, and all that. So I'm kind of been working on bringing the music side of the world over to the Web3 side, because it's very exciting for artists today. Because, you know, the whole music business has changed so dramatically over the years. There's, you know, you can't really sell music anymore. So the new, there's no, you can't buy, you know, records. You don't really have CDs anymore. There's no downloads. It's all streaming business. So I've been really focused on kind of working with artists and, you know, playing a lot, but at the same time, really working towards new business models to help artists generate revenue now and work with towards what the power of what's coming on with all the Web3 and the tokens are. But musically, I tour, and I don't really tour that much anymore, but I go over to Italy. This next week, I'm going to Tulum to play some gigs there. I have a band called Think X, which is made up of Stephen Perkins from Jane's Addiction, Ward Fisher from Fishbone, Kenny Olsen. It's a kind of an all-star band, and we've been doing an exploration of Pink Floyd show for a while right now. And so I've been doing that. That's my thing. I'm doing recording. People call me. I put solos on their records and things like that.
Bueno, nos dice que ahora se está enfocando en dos cosas, en la música y en el lado del negocio con la música, con el Web3, las tokens, las NFTs, que son esas imágenes que se venden, y trae el lado de la música a la Web3. Es interesante este mundo para los artistas porque la música ha cambiado muchísimo. Ya hoy en día no se puede vender música, no se pueden comprar discos, no se pueden hacer descargas, por ejemplo. Todo es básicamente el streaming con las aplicaciones que ya conocemos, y él ahora está trabajando con los artistas en ese nuevo modelo de negocio y cómo los artistas pueden ganar dinero, generar ingresos. Si sigue tocando, tiene una gira, tiene ahorita una banda que se llama Jane's Addiction con Steve Perkins, Kenny Olsen, es como una banda de estrellas, y ha ido a Italia, pero no hace tantas giras, esta semana sí tiene una.
Tremendo, Charlie. Antes de irnos con el tema de los NFTs y de la Web 3.0, preguntémosle por esas épocas gloriosas de Pink Floyd, cómo él llega al proyecto de Pink Floyd y pues cómo se da también su salida.
Scott, we would like to, before we get into NFTs and the current model, business model of music, to speak about Pink Floyd and their golden years. How did you enter or arrive to Pink Floyd, and why did you exit? Why did you leave it?
Excuse me, my voice is gone. You know, we're in Art Basel this week, and over at the Bit Basel, my throat's gone, so I'll do my best. Well, Pink Floyd, I was actually playing in Supertramp back in the days, and Dave Gilmour came and did a guest solo on the Supertramp record. We hit it off, and that night he came out. I had a right down the street from Rick Davies' house. We had a gig that night with Jeff Baxter from the Doobie Brothers and Leland Sklar from Phil Collins' band. And so Dave came down that night and hung out, so we got to be pretty good friends. Week later, I did this show in Los Angeles called The First Dance, which I had a 50-piece band made up of Supertramp, Toto, Tower of Power, all these great musicians. And Dave came to that. And the next day, he called me up and asked me to come play put some solos on the Pink Floyd record. From that, I put those solos on. Next thing, he called me up. The next thing I knew, he offered me to join the band, so I joined the band. We went out on the road to, you know, that particular tour. We did over 200 shows. And the main reason I moved on was I started my business called Seventh Level, and we were just building that, and we took that company public. And so at that point, I couldn't really go on the road anymore, because now I'm a businessman running my business. So that was the main reason at that time.
Bueno, Juan Camilo, es bastante interesante. Él estaba tocando con otra banda espectacular que se llama Supertramp en aquellos días, y David Gilmour fue a hacer un toque con Supertramp. Él estaba invitado, y desde ese momento se llevaron súper bien. Tenían un concierto esa noche, y como ya él dijo, Dave fue, tocó, y también hubo una, como un post, de un post party, una fiesta después del concierto en casa de alguien, y en esa noche se hicieron bastante amigos, se hicieron muy buenos amigos. Una semana después, nuestro invitado Scott Page estaba haciendo un show en Los Ángeles que se llama First Dance, y ahí él estaba invitando a todos los grandes músicos, Supertramp, Toto, Pink Floyd, por supuesto, y ahí es cuando David Gilmour coge el teléfono, lo llama y le pide que hiciera algunos solos para la música de Pink Floyd. Lo hace tan bien que dice, bueno, ahora únete a la banda. Salió de gira con ellos, hizo 200 shows, y la razón principal por la que se fue es porque empezó su negocio llamado Seven Levels, Siete Niveles, y ya ahí le era muy difícil poder unirse a los conciertos. Yo quiero preguntarle a Scott sobre las improvisaciones en los conciertos, porque Pink Floyd es conocidísimo porque en los conciertos, aparte de tocar sus canciones icónicas como la que estamos escuchando, ellos improvisaban mucho y de ahí sacaban canciones nuevas. Scott, I would like to talk about the concerts you were on with Pink Floyd, because it is known that during the concerts, other than playing the classics Comfortably Numb, Wish You Were Here, Shine On You Crazy Diamonds, they also did a lot of improvisations, and based on those improvs, they played or created some new songs. How much did you improvise during the concerts?
Oh, for me, this is actually interesting. All of my parts were improvised. So it was actually very interesting, because Dave just wanted me to be me, right? He wanted me to play the way I play. He never told me, just told me play. So everything I did were solos that I created and played. So it was fully improvised, because that was my main thing, is solos. Now, I also played guitar. And those parts, I played rhythm guitar, not lead guitar, because Dave was there. So I played guitar, and then the rest of the things, all the solos that I did were all mine, so it was total improvisation.
Bueno, muy interesante lo que nos cuenta. En su caso, todas sus partes con el saxofón eran improvisadas, y David Gilmour quería y le dijo, yo quiero que usted sea usted, que toque como usted toque, y todo lo que él hizo en esas giras fueron solos, y por supuesto esos solos en gran parte eran improvisados, y ese era su rol principal. Hoy en día también toca la guitarra, pero era más que todo acompañante, y en ese día también tocó guitarra acompañante, porque pues David Gilmour era el principal, pero sí, era básicamente 100% improvisación.
Yo sí quisiera, pues es que tenemos que aprovecharlo. Hay muchos temas que hablar con él, pero dentro de todo ese momento que vivió con esta banda tan icónica para el rock en el mundo, que nos cuente una anécdota de algún concierto, de tal vez su mejor concierto, su mejor vivencia con la agrupación en todas esas giras, algo que nos pueda contar en esta entrevista para el público de Colombia.
You know, Scott, we would like to take advantage that you're here with us on W Radio, and we would like to know for you to tell us about a concert anecdote, you know, the best concert, best experience, something you could tell us that maybe people don't know, or that you maybe remember very, very specifically, please.
Wow. Okay, boy, that's a tough question. There's so many kind of things. I think, you know, one of the greatest shows we ever did was when we played in Venice, Italy. They floated these two big barges the size of football fields down from Oslo set them up about 150 yards off of St. Mark's Square out on the water. We did a show, but I don't know, it was like 300,000-400,000 people showed up. But we were, it was a big show. It took 5 days to set up. It poured rain, and the actual barge was sinking on one side. So it was this crazy, wild thing. And then the day of the actual show, it was a beautiful, sunny day. It was wild because all these people were living on gondolas for the 5 days to have their own space in front of the show. And they actually had these two other, what they would call party celebrity barges on the side that they were going to move out to the front of the stage to give those people that were the sort of the celebrities the thing, but, you know, give them the special location in front. And all I can remember was the people were throwing bottles at them and moving them. You couldn't move in that city. It was so jammed, and they ended up having to sit on the side of the stage, and they never actually got out there. But that show was extraordinary. You can go look that one up, Venice, Pink Floyd Venice, and go watch that. I mean, the entire St. Mark's Square was filled with people. They lit the buildings all the way down the sides of the street, and then they actually broadcast about 126 countries. You can go watch that show, but that truly was one of the greatest shows in history. There's no question. It was definitely a highlight of my life. I'd never been in anything like that. It was just extraordinary to do. And it was interesting because we had to have boats to get us to the barges all the time to get us out there. It was like $60. I remember it was like $60 to $100 just to go like 50 feet. It was crazy.
Bueno, dice que es una difícil pregunta, pero básicamente se queda con el show de Venecia, Italia, porque asistieron 400,000 personas, fueron 5 días de montaje, llovía cántaros, los lugares se hundían, se inundaban, pero justo el día del concierto fue un día muy soleado y había muchas celebridades, y la idea era mover a las celebridades al frente del escenario para que pudieran disfrutar, pero la gente, el público, no dejaba porque ese lugar estaba completamente lleno a reventar, y pues no se pudo hacer eso. Pero él dice, si quieren ver un concierto espectacular de Pink Floyd, vayan a Venecia, en la Plaza San Marcos. Fue retransmitido a más de 120 países y es uno de los mejores shows de la historia.
Charlie, por favor, preguntémosle por los NFTs. Él es un empresario muy importante en este ámbito, y preguntémosle cómo hace para llevar el mundo de la música al mundo de los NFTs.
Scott, we would like to now speak about NFTs. You're a very important entrepreneur, a very important businessman. How do you manage to bring the world of music to NFTs and vice versa?
Well, one of the things, the great things about tokens are is you can build business models on top of them. And what I mean by that, they allow you, because they have a thing called the smart contract, which is part that ties it, what they call, to the blockchain. And this allows you to put the rights, the roles, the rules, the permissions and things into whatever you connect it to. It actually creates liquidity for whatever you connect to. Now, music because what it does is you can create different kinds of levels of fandom with NFTs, because they have access control, all these things you do. So now you can take a piece of music and give it all kinds of special utility, things that you can do that you can collect. So they can, and then people then can resell those on the secondary market. So I'm trying to teach artists now that this is the new kind of record, in a sense. You can create your music. You can create let's say I'm going to create a new, if I'm going to put an album out, right? I might have an artist come and create a piece of art for each of the songs, right? And then have them, that can be a collection that can have, you know, backstage passes. It could have special access to art. It could have special access to special tracks. And it really is the thing that allows you to build community and your super fans. Because that's the power of NFTs. Because now when I have that NFT, I can now go read. I can, if that NFT can go up in value because it's scarce, I might only make 300 special NFTs that are around this music. And then the person that owns that gets a special collection. Think of it like a box set that's only they're only going to make 100 of, right? So they become collectibles. They become ways for artists to basically create with their fans. They can create a piece of music, and in that rights, they can actually give it to another person that then can build on top of it. So it allows for collaborative music creation, and there's so many things that you can do with it to create a new relationship with the fan. And then these can go up. There are artists that people don't really even know that are doing, you know, multiple six figures when they drop. So one of the artists, Spotty Wi-Fi, who nobody really knows, music artist, his first collection that he put out, he did over, I think it was $700,000 in one collection, which is unheard of. So it really allows you to have a direct-to-consumer relationship with the fan that you've never been able to have before. And it also allows the fan to have something that they could go sell in secondary markets.
Well, Scott, thank you so much for being with us at W Radio. We want to congratulate you for your job in music with Pink Floyd, Supertramp, Toto, and of course, in Art Basel in Miami Beach. And congratulations and good luck with that.
Yeah, I want to give a big shout out real quick to Bit Basel. They did a great job at this thing. It's one great company, and it was fantastic last night here. And so, thank you very much for having me on the show.
Of course, thank you very much. Bueno, nos dicen que los tokens...
Real pleasure.
Very real pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bueno, el resumen ejecutivo nos dice que esas tokens, los NFTs, uno puede construir un modelo de negocio alrededor de ellos porque tienen algo que se llama un contrato inteligente. Entonces uno puede poner los derechos de cualquier cosa a la que uno esté conectado en ese token y es una realidad que crea equidad. Los artistas pueden poner sus álbumes, sus solos, sus canciones, todo eso hay y además pueden crear una conexión con los artistas porque eso puede ser con los fans, perdón, porque eso puede ser parte de un fan. Un fan literalmente puede comprar una de eso y tenerlo. Y él dice, esto es el nuevo álbum, este es el nuevo CD, esta es la nueva manera de vender música y la idea es que nosotros sigamos adelante. Y cito un ejemplo, hay un artista que hizo $700,000 en una colección, algo que jamás antes se había visto.
Y por último, pues habló de su experiencia en Art Basel y en lo que está pasando en Miami en temas de arte, en donde también hay una exposición, My Moon Experience, a Digital Archive on the Moon Surface. Ya son las 10 de la mañana, un minuto. Nos tocó así despedirlo muy rápido porque había mucho tema.